This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 538 of the genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. Since Israel broke the so-called ceasefire on March 18th, it has continued to attack all areas of the Gaza Strip. Dozens of Palestinians have been killed each day in multiple airstrikes, tank shellings, and drone attacks. The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza stated on Wednesday that at least 830 people have been killed in the last 10 days and nearly 1,800 injured. Of those 830 people killed since March 18th, nearly 40% have been children. On Wednesday, at least 11 Palestinians were killed when separate Israeli drone strikes hit tents housing displaced families and a community kitchen in Nuseirat in the central Gaza Strip. Israeli forces have been heavily targeting areas in and around Gaza City, in the northern part of the enclave, in an apparent effort to force Palestinians there to, once again, leave their homes and displacement camps and move south. On Sunday, March 23rd, journalist Mustafa Salah documented the aftermath of Israeli strikes on homes in the Tufah neighborhood in Gaza City. A boy identified as Samir al-Mashawri is the sole survivor of his family when his home was bombed, the reporter said. On that same day, March 23rd, Al-Mizan Center for Human Rights said that in the south, quote, as people began evacuating the Tel el-Sultan neighborhood in Rafah toward Khan Yunis City, Israeli vehicles suddenly cut off the road and opened fire directly at them, killing several. According to eyewitnesses, bodies were seen on the ground near the Al-Baraksat area and the Saudi neighborhood west of Rafah. The United Nations reported on March 26th that approximately 142,000 Palestinians have been displaced since Israel broke the ceasefire and resumed its mass-scale attacks on March 18th. Al Jazeera's Tariq Abu Azoum reported that Palestinians in the western part of Gaza City are being forced to move southwards to towns in the central Gaza Strip, where shelters are extremely overcrowded, where there is little to no infrastructure to support them, and where Israel has repeatedly targeted Palestinians. Since March 2nd, Israel has banned the entry of humanitarian aid and all other essential supplies via all land crossings into Gaza, the longest such closure since October 2023, the United Nations said, adding that, quote, gains made during the ceasefire to support survivors have been reversed. Al-Mizan Center for Human Rights stated on March 25th that, quote, Gaza's residents once again find themselves trapped in the same unbearable circumstances they have endured for the last 15 months of Israel's genocide. Israeli forces persist in attacking Palestinian civilians, killing and injuring them in their homes, tents, and shelters. Their suffering is further exacerbated by Israel's deliberate starvation policy. Months of systematic blocking of sufficient humanitarian aid, now followed by a total ban, will precipitate an unprecedented famine in Gaza, Al-Mizan said. Quote, Israel's ongoing genocide and policy of collective punishment are parts of its broader strategy to make life in Gaza unbearable and forcibly expel its population in total disregard of international law and UN resolutions, the group warned. Quote, this includes the International Court of Justice's provisional measures under the Genocide Convention, which were intended to ensure the safety and security of Palestinians. Our senior editor, Maureen Claire Murphy, writes in her latest post, quote, at least 830 killed in more aggressive Israeli offense, that bakeries have stopped producing bread due to the fuel shortages, worsening the food crisis in Gaza that risks imminent famine, according to the Gaza government media office. Philippe Lazzarini, the head of UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, said that the tightened blockade on Gaza is bringing the population, quote, closer to an acute hunger crisis. Despite the risk of famine, the United Nations announced earlier this week that it would reduce its footprint in Gaza after a Bulgarian national was killed by what the UN said was Israeli tank fire at a guest house last week. Around a third of the approximately 100 international staff working in Gaza will be temporarily relocated, the UN news agency said. Badil, a group focused on the rights of Palestinian refugees, said that the UN decision, quote, reflects how Israel and its colonial allies dictate the international order through impunity. The group added that the withdrawal of UN staff highlights the failure of global institutions to act, and that UN protection must be increased, not decreased, in the face of Israel's genocide in Gaza. For much more, read Maureen's report, At Least 830 Killed in More Aggressive Israeli Offense, on electronicintifada.net. On March 23rd, Israel targeted and bombed the Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunus, engulfing the surgical ward in fire. The airstrike came just days after the hospital was overwhelmed with dead and wounded people who had been hit in Israeli airstrikes in the first few hours of Israel's resumption of the full-scale genocide. A reporter with Al Jazeera was broadcasting live when the Israelis bombed the hospital.
غارة غارة إسرائيلية استهدفت مستشفى ناصر الطبي. نعم الآن غارة إسرائيلية تستهدف.
The hospital complex is one of the only remaining and partially functioning hospitals that is able to treat patients during this ongoing genocide. Israel targeted the surgical department on the fourth floor of one of the hospital buildings. At least two Palestinians were killed, including a teenage child. Dr. Firouz Sidwa, one of several American doctors who are currently working at Nasser, described the scene the day after the bombing.
My name is Firouz Sidwa. I'm a trauma surgeon volunteering with MedGlobal. I'm from California in the United States. Yesterday, the Israeli army attacked Nasser Hospital. A missile came in that wall and killed two men, one of whom I don't know, but another was a 16-year-old boy, my patient. His name was Ibrahim. He was going to go home today, actually. He had injuries to his colon from bombing in the Mawasi on March 18th when the bombing restarted. I operated on him. I was able to save him. He would have had a normal life, but now he's dead. This kind of craziness of attacking a hospital directly, sending a missile through a hospital wall, the sign that says Nasser Medical Complex is broken in half from the missile.
That was Dr. Firouz Sidwa inside Nasser Medical Complex earlier this week. Medical staff have already been cleaning up the rubble and repairing the damage to the surgical ward as much as they can without the availability of construction materials that are blocked entry by Israel. Doctors Without Borders stated that Nasser Hospital is one of the last main medical facilities in southern Gaza, providing care for people with severe burns and trauma injuries, newborns, and pregnant women. The group said that along with all other clinics and hospitals across Gaza, Nasser is, quote, facing several challenges of supplies, including hygiene items, medication, and surgical items, while Israeli authorities continue their siege on the strip. Due to the numerous influxes of patients from recent bombings, Doctors Without Borders stocks are decreasing faster than expected, and the blockade is making it impossible for our teams to restock vital items such as antibiotics, painkillers, and anesthetics. This was not the first time that Nasser Medical Complex was attacked. Last year, in February 2024, and again in March 2024, Israeli forces attacked and besieged the hospital, arresting and disappearing medical staff and patients to Israeli torture camps and prisons. One surgeon, Dr. Khaled Al-Ser, was detained and tortured for 6 months inside the notorious Sidi Tayman prison camp and at Ofer Military Prison. He was released last September and returned to work at Nasser Hospital. Dr. Al-Ser posted a photo he took of the remnants of the missile that struck Nasser Hospital earlier this week. 3 days earlier, Israel blew up the Turkish Friendship Hospital near Gaza City, after occupying it and turning it into a military base. It was the only dedicated cancer treatment center in Gaza and was bombed by Israel in the early months of the genocide. The Tel Aviv newspaper Haaretz reports that the army has launched an investigation into the demolition of the Turkish Friendship Hospital And it is suspected that a notorious Israeli army commander, Brigadier General Yehuda Vach, ordered the demolition without receiving approval from his superiors. The Hind Rajab Foundation, which is collecting evidence of war crimes and those who perpetrate them, has identified Yehuda Vach as the most brutal Israeli army war criminal. Quote, "The name of Brigadier General Yehuda Vach, commander of the Israel Defense Forces 252nd Division, has become synonymous with unrestrained brutality, sadism, and corruption," Hind Rajab Foundation says. "His deliberate and systematic targeting of Palestinian civilians, particularly in the Netzarim corridor, amounts to genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes under the Rome Statute." Yehuda Vach's brother, Colonel Golan Vach, as our listeners and viewers may know, invented the lie that Hamas fighters burned Israeli babies alive on October 7th, a lie that has been repeated by genocide supporters, major Western political figures, and corporate media in order to manufacture consent for the Holocaust in Gaza. Because of the more than 3 weeks of intensified Israeli siege on Gaza and the closure of all crossings to humanitarian aid, medications, medical supplies, and blood stores are at catastrophically low levels. The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza called for blood donations this week. The health ministry said that, quote, "the stocks of medical supplies for laboratories and blood banks are depleted, and what is available does not meet the requirements of the work with the increasing number of wounded." The continued closure of the crossing to medical supplies and laboratory equipment exacerbates the crisis, the ministry added. Munir Al-Bursh, the director general of the health ministry in Gaza, said that the word catastrophic falls short of describing the state of the health sector in Gaza amid Israel's war of annihilation against Palestinians. Al-Bursh told Al Jazeera Arabic that Gaza is suffering from severe shortages in fuel and basic medical supplies, including gauze and oxygen tanks. Quote, "Right now there is one power generator at the Indonesian hospital and seven patients in the intensive care unit. If that generator stops, the patients will die," Al-Bursh warned. He added that the lack of medicine for chronic illnesses, including hypertension and diabetes, is killing people in Gaza. Quote, "These are real miseries that the viewer cannot see. There is slow death in Gaza," he said. Earlier this week, Israeli forces besieged and disappeared 15 ambulance and civil defense workers in Rafah when they were attempting to rescue and treat the dead and injured from Israeli airstrikes. 9 members of the Palestine Red Crescent Society are amongst those missing and possibly kidnapped. As of Wednesday, March 26th, the medical crew remains missing and their whereabouts are unknown. The Red Crescent stated that, quote, "the occupation authorities continue to reject all coordination attempts by international organizations to facilitate the rescue team's access to the site where they were last seen." The Palestinian Civil Defense spokesperson said on March 23rd, quote, "we do not know their fate or whereabouts. Are they still alive, martyred, or captured? In light of this serious incident, the Israeli occupation army is placing our crews and the Palestinian Red Crescent Society before an unknown fate that threatens their lives. This fate also threatens the lives of approximately 50,000 citizens displaced from their homes and shelters, leaving them trapped without humanitarian and medical services. Other medical workers and physicians remain in Israeli detention or in torture camps. Dr. Hussam Abu Safiya, the director of Kamal Adwan Hospital in Beit Lahia, who was abducted by Israeli soldiers in late December 2024, this week had his arbitrary detention order extended for another 6 months. Al-Mizan Center for Human Rights stated that, quote, "under the unlawful combatants law, such detention orders must be reviewed by an Israeli civilian court within 45 days of issuance and subsequently every 6 months. This apartheid law is used by Israeli authorities to incarcerate Palestinian residents of Gaza, including Dr. Abu Safiya, without charge or fair trial, circumventing basic protections under international law." During the hearing, the Southern District Prosecutor submitted a secret file to the court, alleging that Dr. Abu Safiya poses a threat to the security of the State of Israel. In response, Almazan's legal team, representing Dr. Abu Safiya, asserted his innocence and emphasized that he was solely performing medical and administrative duties at Kamal Adwan Hospital. The defense also requested access to the classified investigation materials. However, the prosecution declined and the court upheld the refusal. This week, Israel assassinated two reporters in Gaza, bringing the number of murdered journalists since October 2023 to 208. Mohammed Mansour, a correspondent for the Palestine Today satellite channel, was hit in an Israeli airstrike on his home in Khan Yunis on March 24th. He was 29 years old. Just hours later, Israeli forces bombed and killed Al Jazeera journalist Hossam Shabat while he was driving in his car in Beit Lahia. Hossam was 23 years old and had spent 15 months separated from his family while he covered the war from the besieged north of Gaza. Just a couple of months ago, in January, we shared clips of Hossam Shabat being carried on the shoulders of his community when the ceasefire was announced. Another clip from January showed his reunion with his mother after 492 days of separation from her and his siblings. Just 2 days before he was killed, Hossam posted a clip of himself putting his press vest and helmet back on. He captioned it, quote, "I thought it was over and I'd finally get some rest, but the genocide is back in full force and I'm back on the front lines." There were enormous funeral processions for both Hossam and Mohammed in the streets. Here's Hossam's bereaved mother. Hossam Shabat had pre-written a statement in the event that he would be killed. His team published it on Monday, and I'll read it now. "If you are reading this now, know that I have been martyred, likely targeted by the Israeli occupation forces. When all of this began, I was just 21 years old, a university student with dreams like any other young man. For the past 18 months, I dedicated every moment of my life to my people. I documented the horror in northern Gaza, minute by minute, determined to reveal the truth they sought to bury. I slept on sidewalks, in schools, in tents, anywhere I could. Every day was a battle for survival. I endured months of hunger, but I never left my people's side. By God, I fulfilled my duty as a journalist. I risked everything to tell the truth, and now at last I have found rest, something I have not known for the past 18 months. I did this because I believe in the Palestinian cause, in our right to this land. The greatest honor of my life was to die defending it and serving its people. I ask you now, do not stop speaking about Gaza. Do not let the world look away. Keep fighting, keep telling our stories until Palestine is free. For the last time, Hossam Shabat from northern Gaza." This is a clip of Hossam Shabat greeting his friend, fellow journalist Mahmoud Sabah. Hossam says, quote, "We still want to get married and we still want to travel, and you want to invite me for a meal." We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight excerpts of "Asbestos Dust Threat Looms Over Much of Gaza" by Shaima Eid, writing from Gaza. Shaima writes that, quote, "As rubble removal continues across Gaza, concerns are mounting over airborne dust that may carry asbestos fibers, posing health risks, including asbestosis, cancer, and chronic respiratory diseases," health officials in Gaza say. "Asbestos, a fibrous material once used in construction for its heat and fire resistance, is now globally classified as a carcinogen. Because of Israel's intense bombardment of Gaza and its destruction of an estimated 92% of housing units, asbestos has been transformed into airborne dust." Dr. Shadi Awad, a consultant in pulmonology and bronchoscopy at Al-Shifa Hospital, warns that Gaza residents are inhaling air polluted with smoke and destruction residues daily, posing a direct threat to their health. Quote, the polluted air enters the airways and directly impacts lung tissues, leading to chronic inflammation and severe respiratory disorders. In the coming years, we may witness a rise in respiratory disease cases due to continuous exposure to these harmful particles, he told the Electronic Intifada in a phone interview. Reports from the United Nations indicate that massive amounts of debris in Gaza contain asbestos, a substance that has been banned in at least 55 countries because it is a severe health hazard. According to UN estimates, the debris amounts to approximately 39 million tons, which contains hazardous materials such as asbestos and unexploded ordnance. This complicates debris removal efforts and endangers civilians. Dr. Awad emphasized that reducing exposure to dust from debris is the primary way to mitigate these risks. This can be done by wearing protective masks and minimizing one's presence in heavily polluted areas. He warned, however, that such measures are only temporary solutions and insisted that Gaza urgently needs comprehensive health and environmental intervention to protect its residents from long-term catastrophic consequences. That's an excerpt from Asbestos Dust Threat Looms Over Much of Gaza by Shaima Eid on electronicintifada.net. Turning now to the occupied West Bank, where Israeli army raids and intensified settler colonial violence have continued in the northern region for 2 months, and where more than 70 Palestinians have been killed. More than 3,200 housing units in the Jenin refugee camp have become uninhabitable due to Israel's ongoing military offensive, according to Mohammed Jarar, the chief of the Jenin municipality. The situation in Jenin camp is entirely catastrophic, Jarar told the Anadolu news agency. Israeli forces continue to demolish, bomb, and burn Palestinian homes, he said. He added that Israel rejected a Palestinian appeal against plans to raise 93 additional residential buildings containing about 300 housing units. We expect the demolition could happen at any moment, he warned, adding that such a move would deepen the humanitarian crisis in the camp. In Masafer Yatta, near the southern city of Al-Khalil, or Hebron, armed and masked Israeli settlers and soldiers rampaged through the village of Susia on March 24th, attacking local resident Hamdan Balal. Bilal is the co-director of the Academy Award-winning film No Other Land, which is about the ongoing colonization of Masafer Yatta. Bilal was beaten by an Israeli settler who he said kicked him in the head like it was a football. The soldiers then detained him and two other Palestinians, according to the Associated Press. Bilal said he was kept blindfolded for more than 20 hours, sitting on the floor under a blasting air conditioner. The soldiers kicked, punched, or hit him with a stick whenever they came on their guard shifts, he said, adding that he doesn't speak Hebrew, but he said he heard them say his name and the word Oscar. He was released on Tuesday from a police station in the settlement colony of Kiryat Arba, which is built inside the old city of Al-Khalil. My colleague Tamara Nassar writes that, quote, a Palestinian child died in Israeli custody on March 23rd. The first recorded case of a Palestinian child's death in Israeli detention in history, according to the group Defense for Children International Palestine. Waleed Khaled Abdullah Ahmed's family was notified of his death by the Palestinian Authority Prisoners Affairs Committee without details surrounding the circumstances of his death. The committee told the family that Waleed had scabies and an intestinal infection. The 17-year-old, who was held in Megiddo prison located in northern Israel, was, quote, walking in the prison yard, became dizzy, collapsed, and hit his head on a railing, DCIP reported. Other child prisoners cried out for help from Israeli prison guards, but none responded. Waleed's fellow prisoners carried him to a gate where the guards took him. Israel is withholding the teenager's body from his family, preventing them from holding a proper burial. This also hinders an independent autopsy that could determine the exact cause of death. Waleed was arrested in the middle of the night on September 30th, 2024, from his home in the village of Silwad, northeast of Ramallah in the occupied West Bank. He was first taken to an interrogation center before he was transferred to Megiddo prison. The children's rights group noted that the transfer of prisoners from the occupied West Bank and Gaza into Israel is illegal under international law and constitutes a war crime. Waleed was beaten and abused by Israeli soldiers and imprisoned in Israel, where he was fed meager portions of rotten food and subjected to overcrowded, unsanitary conditions while at the same time isolated completely from his family, said Ayed Abu Aktesh, Accountability Program Director at DCIP. For much more, read Tamara Nassar's recent report, Palestinian Child Dies in Israeli Custody in First Recorded Case, on electronicintifada.net. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.